For this morning's message, let us welcome Reverend Tim LaPorte.
Good morning. Again, thanks for being here. You could be somewhere else, but you're here. Thank you. Here, my shoe's untied. As I've said before, the opinions expressed here are not necessarily the opinions of the Temple of Spirituality, but they are my experiences. I'm going to do a quick talk in three parts. First, I'm going to talk about the World Cup soccer tournament. Then I'm going to read two speeches, and then I'm going to read two prayers. So for those of you that don't know, I'm a soccer referee. Soccer, being born in Germany, soccer's been a large part of my life. It's part income. It keeps me physically fit, and it's just a joy. Here in Tucson, we have people from all over the world, from Uganda and Europe and Asia and the South Pacific and South America, Canada and America. The World Cup ends today. In fact, it starts in 30 minutes, the final. Thank God for DVRs. A lot of firsts in this tournament. 48 teams from around the world are in this tournament. The groups were announced back in December at the Kennedy Center for Performing Arts in Washington, D.C. There, the President of the United States was awarded a Peace Prize by FIFA. And you all know what happened 2 months later? He started a war with Iran. So, Peace Prize. Anyway. I was excited when Canada, the United States, and Mexico was awarded the tournament. It's the first time that it's been held in several countries at the same time. And by then, the politics in this country and around the world were pretty bad, so I had my doubts. But based on my understanding of the law of attraction, I expected good things. I expected joy and celebration, and there certainly were joy and celebration. I expected good things, and I was not disappointed. We saw culture, costumes, flags, and heard anthems from around the world where we experienced pure joy and celebration. One of the things that sort of blew my mind were small countries that didn't have a lot of money contended with large countries that did have a lot of money. Countries like Côte d'Ivoire, that we know as the Ivory Coast, Cape Verde, and Curaçao. The Scots brought their bagpipes and their fervor for life, as did Norway when they did their row. Japan, very interesting culture. I've never been there, I've never really studied the culture, but the children in Japan are taught to clean up their own classrooms. They don't have janitors in the schools. They clean up their classrooms either at the end of class or at the end of the day, I'm not really sure, but just for me shows me a sign of respect for the process. Well, that carries over to the World Cup and other soccer games. They clean up their seats after themselves. Absolutely remarkable. So, these visitors, when they came to America, saw true American neighborliness, and they wrote about it. Ascribed to several pages on Facebook, and the stories, whether it's the East Coast or the Deep South or the Southwest or the Northwest part of this country, even the heart of the country, just remarkable experiences. The newspapers and the media seemingly have misportrayed us. We're a joyful, welcoming people, not people that want to exclude people that come to this country. History was made at this World Cup. The first female medical director of Curaçao, There was a doctor, female physician, who was the doctor for the team for Curaçao. That was amazing. The first all-female refereeing crew reffed a men's game in the World Cup. They were all from the United States. They reffed Czechia versus South Africa. And in closing about World Cup, let me say that the U.S. women's national team plays next year's World Cup, Women's World Cup, in Brazil. Yay. Yay. And the women have been world champions 4 times. Yay. Good job, ladies. Okay. Enough about World Cup. As we in America celebrate our 250th birthday, several things come to mind. By a show of hands, anybody know what our motto is? It's on our coins. Not that one, the other one. E pluribus unum, which translates to out of many, one. Our diversity is our strength. So, I want to read. I had these marked off. I am reading a couple of passages, and I wanted to, around our 250th birthday, this is called A Patriot's Handbook. It's a book of songs, poems, stories, and speeches celebrating the land we love that was selected and introduced by Caroline Kennedy. Caroline is the daughter of John F. Kennedy. It's been a remarkable book. I've asked my wife for it years ago, and she blessed me with it. So let me read, make sure I'm on the right page, because I want to do it in a specific order. This is a speech against missionaries' efforts to baptize members of the Seneca tribe. Red Jacket was the chief of the Seneca Nation. His Seneca name was Otentiani, which he later changed to Sagayawetha when he became chief. He supported the British during the American Revolution, hence the name Red Jacket. However, he eventually sought peace with the United States government and supported the United States against Britain in the War of 1812. Red Jacket fought hard to preserve Native American customs and resisted European values and missionary efforts. Toward the end of his life, he was deposed as chief, defended himself before a tribunal council, and was reinstated. And this is a speech he gave. Friend and brother, it was the will of the Great Spirit that we should meet together this day. Brother, this council fire was kindled by you. It was at your request that we came together at this time. We have listened with attention to what you have said. You have requested us to speak our minds freely. This gives us great joy. For now, we consider that we stand upright before you and can speak what we think. All have heard your voice, and all speak to you now as one man. Our minds are agreed. Brother, listen to what we say. There was a time when our forefathers owned this great island. Their seats extended from the rising to the setting sun. The Great Spirit had made it for the use of Indian. He had created the buffalo, the deer, and other animals for food. He had made the bear and the beaver. Their skins served us for clothing. He had scattered them over the country and taught us how to take them. He had caused the earth to produce corn for bread. All this he had done for his red children because he loved them. If we had some dispute about our hunting ground, they were generally settled without the shedding of much blood. But an evil day came upon us. Your forefathers crossed the great water and landed on this island. Their numbers were small. They found friends and not enemies. They told us they had fled from their own country for fear of wicked men and had come here to enjoy their religion. They asked for a small seat. We took pity on them, granted their request, and they sat down among us. We gave them corn and meat. They gave us poison in return. Brother, our seats were once large, and yours were small. You have now become a great people, and we have scarcely a place left to spread our blankets. You have got our country, but are not satisfied. You want to force your religion upon us. Brother, continue to listen. You say that you are sent to instruct us how to worship the Great Spirit agreeably to his mind. And if we do not take hold of the religion which you white people teach, we shall be unhappy hereafter. You say that you are right and we are lost. How do we know this to be true? We understand that your religion is written in a book. If it was intended for us as well as you, why has not the Great Spirit given to us, and not only to us, but why did he not give our forefathers the knowledge of that book with the means of understanding it rightly? We only know what you tell us about it. How shall we know what to believe, being so often deceived by the white people? Brother, you say there is but one way to worship and serve the Great Spirit. If there is but one religion, why do you white people differ so much about it? Why do you not all agree if you can all read the same book? Brother, we do not understand these things. We are told that your religion was given to your forefathers and has been handed down from father to son. We also have a religion which is given to our forefathers and has been handed down to us, their children. We worship in that way. It teaches us to be thankful for all the favors we receive, to love one another, and be united. We never quarrel about religion. Brother, we do not wish to destroy your religion or take it from you. We only want to enjoy ours. That was Seneca. I apologize for sort of bringing the spirit down, but it comes in my mind from the space that we are one. That the first people lived for so many years on this land and continued to do so. And as a firefighter, I'm heartbroken what's going on in Canada with so many wildfires destroying people's lands, homes, and ways of life. And now another speech. This is John F. Kennedy's inaugural address given January 20th, 1961. We observe today not a victory of party, but a celebration of freedom, symbolizing an end as well as a beginning, signifying renewal as well as change. I'm going to start again, but I'm going to say that when I read this speech, I hear JFK's voice in my head. So if I start talking like John F. Kennedy, you will understand. We observe today not a victory of party, but a celebration of freedom, symbolizing an end as well as a beginning, signifying renewal as well as a change. For I have sworn before you and Almighty God the same solemn oath that our forebears prescribed nearly a century and three quarters ago. The world is very different now. For man holds in his mortal hands the power to abolish all forms of human poverty and all forms of human life. Yet, the same revolutionary beliefs for which our forebears fought are still at issue around the globe. The belief that the rights of men come not from the generosity of the state, but from the hand of God. We dare not forget today that we are the heirs of that first revolution. Let the word go forth from this time and place to friends and foe alike that the torch has been passed to a new generation of Americans, born in this century, tempered by war, disciplined by hard and bitter peace, proud of our ancient heritage, and unwilling to witness or permit the slow undoing of those human rights to which this nation has always been committed, and to which we are committed today at home and around the world. Let every nation know, whether it wishes us well or ill, that we shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe, to assure the survival and the success of liberty. This much we pledge, and more. To those old allies whose cultural and spiritual origins we share, we pledge the loyalty of faithful friends. United, there is little we cannot do in a host of cooperative ventures. Divided, there is little we can do, for we dare not meet a powerful challenge at odds and split asunder. To those new states whom we welcome to the ranks of the free, we pledge our word that one form of colonial control shall not have passed away merely to be replaced by a far more iron tyranny. We shall not always expect to find them supporting our view, but we shall always hope to find them strongly supporting their own freedom. And to remember that in the past, those who foolishly sought power by riding the back of the tiger ended up inside. To those people in the huts and villages of half the globe struggling to break the bonds of mass misery, we pledge our best efforts to help them help themselves for whatever period is required. Not because the communists may be doing it, not because we seek their votes, but because it is right. If a free society cannot help the many who are poor, it cannot save the few who are rich. To our sister republic south of the border, we offer a special pledge to convert our good words into good deeds in a new alliance for progress to assist free men and free governments in casting off the chains of poverty. But this peaceful revolution of hope cannot become the prey of hostile powers. Let all our neighbors know that we shall join with them to oppose aggression and subversion anywhere in the Americas. And let every other power know that in this hemisphere intends to remain the master of its own house. To that World Assembly of Sovereign States, the United Nations, our last best hope in an age where instruments of war have far outpaced the instruments of peace, we renew our pledge of support to prevent it from becoming merely a forum for invective, to strengthen its shield of new and the weak, and to enlarge the area in which writ may run. Finally, to those nations who would make themselves our adversary, we offer not a pledge but a request that both sides begin anew the quest for peace before the dark powers of destruction unleashed by science engulf all humanity in planned or accidental self-destruction. We dare not tempt them with weakness, for only when our arms are sufficient beyond doubt can we be certain beyond doubt that they will never be employed. But neither can two great and powerful groups of nations take comfort from our present course. Both sides overburdened by the cost of modern weapons, both rightly alarmed by the steady spread of the deadly atom, yet both racing to alter that uncertain balance of terror that stays the hand of mankind's final war. So let us begin anew, remembering on both sides that civility is not a sign of weakness and sincerity is always subject to proof. Let us never negotiate out of fear, but let us never fear to negotiate. Let both sides explore what problems unite us instead of belaboring those problems which divide us. Let both sides for the first time formulate serious and precise proposals for the inspection and control of arms and bring the absolute power to destroy other nations under the absolute control of all nations. Let both sides seek to invoke the wonders of science instead of its terrors. Together, let us explore the stars, conquer the deserts, eradicate disease, tap the ocean depths, and encourage the arts and commerce. Let both sides unite to heed in all corners of the earth the command of Isaiah to undo the heavy burdens and let the oppressed go free. And if a beachhead of cooperation may push back the jungle of suspicion, let both sides join in creating a new endeavor, not a new balance of power, but a new world of law, where the strong are just and the weak secure and the peace preserved. All this will not be finished in the first 100 days, nor will it be finished in the first 1,000 days, nor in the life of this administration, nor even perhaps in a lifetime on this, in our lifetime on this planet. But let us begin. In your hands, my fellow citizens, more than mine, will rest the final success or failure of our course. Since this country was founded, every generation of Americans has been summoned to give testimony to its national loyalty. The graves of young Americans who answered the call to service around the globe. Now, the trumpet summons us again, not as a call to bear arms, though arms we need, not as a call to battle, though embattled we are, but as a call to hear, to bear the burden of a long twilight struggle, year in and year out, rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, a struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself. Can we forge against these enemies a grand and global alliance, north and south, east and west, that can assure a more fruitful life for all mankind? Will you join in that historic effort? In the long history of the world, only a few generations have been granted the role of defending freedom in its hour of maximum danger. I do not shrink from that responsibility. I welcome it. I do not believe that any of us would exchange places with any other people or any other generation. The energy, the faith, the devotion which we bring to this endeavor will light our country and all who serve it, and the glow from that fire can truly light the world. And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. My fellow citizens of the world, ask not what America will do for you, but together, what we can do for the freedom of man. Finally, whether you are citizens of America or citizens of the world, ask of us here the same high standards of strength and sacrifice which we ask of you. With a good conscience, our only sure reward, with history the final judge of our deeds, let us go forth to lead the land we love, asking his blessing and his help, but knowing that here on earth, God's work must truly be our own. I was only 5 years old when JFK gave that speech. I clearly didn't hear it nor understood it, but reading it in retrospect, it seems timely. There's a lot of JFK as a Navy lieutenant, I think he was, understood the sacrifices of war. But and clearly there were problems with his family and politics and such. But what the attitude he brought to this country and an awareness of the arts and commerce, just remarkable. And let me close with two prayers. The Iroquois, a confederacy of six Native American nations, the Mohawk, the Oneida, the Onondaga, the Onondaga, the Tuscarora, the Cayuga, and Seneca, inhabited New York State in palisaded villages containing longhouses. Their complex political structure and military strength was weakened when they supported the British in the American Revolution. The Thanksgiving was originally translated by Harriet Maxwell Converse, who had devoted her life to the cause and culture of the Six Nations tribe in the state of New York. And because of her efforts to defeat an 1891 law that would have pushed the New York Indians off their reservation, she was made a chief of the Six Nations, the only time such an honor was ever bestowed on a white woman. We who are here present thank the Great Spirit that we are here to praise him. We thank him that he created men and women and ordered that those beings shall always be living to multiply the earth. We thank him for making the earth and giving these beings its products to live on. We thank him for the water that comes out of the earth and runs for our lands. We thank him for all the animals on the earth. We thank him for certain timbers that grow and have fluids coming from them for us all. We thank him for the branches of the trees that grow shadows for our shelter. We thank him for the beings that come from the west, the thunder and lightning that water the earth. We thank him for the light which we call our oldest brother, the sun that works for our good. We thank him for all the fruits that grow on the trees and vines. We thank him for his goodness in making the forest and thank all its trees. We thank him for the darkness that gives us rest and for this kind being of the darkness that gave us light and moon. We thank him for the bright spots in the skies that give us signs, the stars. We give him thanks for our supporters who have charge of our harvests. We give thanks that the voice of the Great Spirit can still be heard through the words of Gane Odio. We thank the Great Spirits that have privilege of this pleasant occasion. We give thanks for the person who can sing the Great Spirit's music and hope that they will be privileged to continue his faith. We thank the Great Spirit for all the persons who performed the ceremonies on this occasion. I apologize for reading so much and not speaking from my heart so much, but sometimes the words that I read written on a page are precise. In closing, I want to read a quick prayer from White Lily. White Lily blesses each and every one of you here at this time, and she asks that God pour out his radiance in a greater abundance upon you, that you live so close within. That you live so close within his light and within his love, that you are not conscious of the things of the earth, that your feet do not touch the dust, that you will go forward in light, love, harmony, and companionship, that you will all grow and manifest that which you are striving for, heaven on earth. God bless you all, White Lily. And thank you for your attention this morning. I appreciate you listening and being present for me.